Okay, so there are certain stories in the Torah, in most cases connected to the creation, that are mythical, and it becomes harder to appreciate the mythical because we're living in a world, especially here in LA and Hollywood, where there's a whole industry, which is phenomenal, of making these magical movies, and they display all sorts of myths and super people and super creatures. So we became immune to it. The Friedrich Rebbe, interesting, I know it's too late for all of us, our kids are too big. The Friedrich Rebbe wrote how detrimental it is for children, for them to be exposed to any magical story if it's not emes. Because somewhere deep down we believe in the magical. We know that there's something out there that's a lot greater than this. People have that instinct. And if a child is taught all of these stories, which have some truth, could be, but it's not Torah, what it does is, it makes such a deep wound that it's very difficult to recover from. Because you hear it, because it grips you. All of the Disney movies and the magic and this, it grips you. But on the other hand, it's not emes. So something deep down, a signal, this is not true.
Robert, so some super tzaddikim are not really.
That's exactly that. Friedrich Rebbe was of the opinion that the more the magical the story, whether easy or whether scary, if it's emes, it should be told to children. Because they know that there's something beyond what they know. But when you tell it to them, it has to be emes. Okay, that's just as a good intro going forward. In other words, what we need now, I know that they make a lot of videos for kids. First of all, there's such a market for that. There's so little amazing content for young children. And a big yasher koyach for the people that did whatever they did, because I did nothing. But we should make... Like, what am I talking about? I'm talking about like this. The Medrash on this week's Parsha, the Torah introduces the laws of Kashrut for the first time. And when God made the world, these are the words. God created Vayivra Elikim es hataninim hagedoylam. Mi yodea mazeh? Mazeh tanin? You speak Hebrew?
Crocodiles.
Taninim hagedoylam. So these taninim hagadoylim are mythical creatures.
Dinosaurs?
When you read, okay, so the words that Rashi says, that's where Rashi introduces dragon. The word Leviathan. Leviathan, which you can say is a dragon. The word dragon is a great word because at least you're communicating that it's not something that you know. It's something awesome. Doesn't have to be awesome, horrifying. But awesome. Bigger than what I can handle.
So
I'm just saying it's a good translation. It literally, it's a whale.
Yeah, that's a good, yeah.
But the problem with the word whale is that you know a whale. Mm-hmm. So when it says in the Medrash that the Leviathan is so large that it circles the whole world. So that's not a whale. It's a monstrous whale. Many English Siddurim translate, God created the big sea monsters. And Rashi writes the Medrash that God created everything, male and female. And the law of nature is that they mate and they procreate. But right after God created the Leviathan, the male and the female, God says to himself, as if he never knew, if they're gonna create, there won't be room for anything else. It's like the monsters in our lives that like they take up the whole world. You can't function, can't handle them, because if I'm dealing with them, I cannot, like there's certain monsters. So what did God do? Guys, don't get angry at me. I didn't make up the story. So which one did God get rid of? God,
female.
What?
He killed her
off. God killed the female and salted her.
And saved her from Mashiach.
Because you can't have both male and female. The Gemara asks, why didn't God kill the male and salt him? It's not what it sounds like. These are the words. That's why I like these stories, because we are attracted, at least some of us are attracted to these magical stories people love. I love Sipurei Tzadikim. At least it's emes. It better be emes. If not, they're wounding us if they give us a sheker. some of these Hasidic stories, you're laughing. Like we said ourselves, if you believe they all happened, then, you know, don't be naive, don't be foolish. But here it says, the Gemara says, because a salted male fish does not taste as good as a salted female fish. And there's a purpose for them. So the purpose is better her. So and he is a monster. Is he good? Is he bad? We don't know. It's something that him and her, they would have completely, there would be no room for anyone else. Don't think about a monster as in the coming to get you. A worse monster. The worst monster is there's no space for you. Listen to me, that's a much worse monster. Because when you look at what we were speaking before, I don't mind just repeating this, but if a person has others in their lives that are very cruel, I'm a chaya. At least you're not confused. They're bad people. But if you have other people that are the most wonderful people in the world, but you take up all the space, now you're trapped. Mamash, like, what do you do with that? How can you not love them? You feel bad. Something is wrong with me. Maybe I'm envious of such kind, great people. Maybe I'm so low. Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe there's no room for you. You just don't know how to word it. So the monstrosity of the Leviathan, male and female, is that they would leave room for nothing else. So the female was killed and salted to be eaten to the righteous in the world to come.
Yeah,
I'm getting there. Yeah. One second. And now there's this male Leviathan. So there is a problem, but at least it cannot grow. But he takes up the whole world. You know, when it says in the Medrash that he's wrapping the whole world around. He's suffocating the world. In the books of Kabbalah, it says that, you know how big this male Leviathan is? Is that he goes around all of the constellations. So you have 12 constellations. And you know what goes through all of them? The Leviathan.
So inland and?
Yeah, in the heavens. There's no room. They're everywhere. You cannot escape the Leviathan. If you think they have today safe spaces, that's because you are ignoring the elephant in the room. There is no safe space from the Leviathan. We're living because there isn't a pair separated. So we have the Leviathan. Now, in the future, these are the words that Asad HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lasois Kenigia LaTzadikim. God is going to make. Kenigia means a show, a gladiator show or a circus. There's going to be entertainment for the Tzadikim. It's going to be important for us to witness that there's going to be, God is going to get the Leviathan. It's going to manifest. It's going to be this humongous. And its counterpart, because the Leviathan lives in water. The water is under the ocean. Mystical words. There are heavenly waters. I know we have this on the Chumash, right? There was the waters that got put to Rakia. The Rakia of the second day of creation divided these waters from the heavenly waters. So this Sefer Yetzirah that writes that the Leviathan goes through all of the constellations. It's also in water. It's a water creature. Lives in water. Both. It's both. I don't know. It's both.
It's not physical?
Okay. That's a very important question. I don't know. It doesn't have to be physical. It's certainly not only physical. It's certainly not only. So when there are certain energies that we will encounter, if we know what to look for, that the more we learn about this creature, we'll say, that's the Leviathan. Okay. Everything that's in the water has to have a counterpart on the land. With safe spaces. There's no escape. And there is this crazy dynamic between the land and the ocean. Again, using words of the sages, there's so much wisdom here that we should appreciate that we don't understand that they're communicating. That kol ma sheyesh bayabash sheyesh bayam. Everything you have on dry land, you have in the water. Everything. If it's here, it's there. If it's there, it's here. Parenthetically, you can look it up in Gemara Brachas in the Bavli Talmud Daf Ches Amud Aleph, page 8a. We have what the sages call the dolphin, dalfina. A dalfina is, says Rashi, a siren, if that's the word in English, or for the dumbed down English, a mermaid. A hostel. But this is, yeah.
What is it?
It's a creature that's half human and half fish.
That's not me.
Yeah. And they're very dangerous. The Gemara speaks about it, and not only that, the Gemara speaks in another place regarding Titus, is that what they do is
they're saying they are
means they're non-domesticated animals that are very vicious, and what they do is that they seduce sailors through their beautiful singing, the Gemara says,
and then they eat them, right?
And then there's the people become so entranced or so wowed by them. So they put their guard down and they board the ships and that's a breakfast or a snack.
And they eat it?
They eat us,
yeah. The soldiers, the sailors.
Sure. Yeah. And the only solution is that when you go through their terror, again, whether this is physical or not, I don't care, is that you have to plug your ears. In other words, there are certain powers in the world. Don't think, yeah, I'm stronger than that. It will get you and it's going to kill you. You wanna solve the problem? Plug your ears. Wow. There was a Jew, a cute Jew, a very smart Lubavitcher Chassid, Jimmy Garari, Zalman Garari. When I was growing up in the 80s, he was already an elder. He was very successful, and he was very rigid. It's a whole, you know, that generation of rigid people with really short one-liners. He, when he got older, he needed hearing aids. And it was the biggest gift that God gave him. He made everyone know. And when people talked to him, if he didn't hear it, they would like shout it again and they would think he's going to put up the numbers, the old. He says, I already learned the rule. If I don't hear it the first time, I will not hear it. The second time, I won't hear it. The third time, he was very proud of his capacity of not hearing. To be married to him can be very frustrating.
Yes.
But to interact with the world, with the koyach, that when you somehow feel, this is not for me, you put the boundary, not let me go sit, and then no, he doesn't hear. I'm a chaya. Tragically, I know I'm being recorded. He did something not kosher financially, and he was caught, and he sat in a federal jail for a certain amount of time. One of the things he did was he said he's going in there without his ear things. He didn't want to interact in an environment he didn't hear. Exactly what you don't want to get from your spouse, that attitude. It doesn't even hear. Okay. Anyways, coming back. So you have the shor. So the counter of the Leviathan is called the shor habar.
Shor habar.
Shor habar. It's beis reish, and the word bar or bar, not boir, not with a cholam. It's really beis with a kamatz. Bar means three things. Just to know that the word bar, we say in Tehillim, the ki kapayim ubar levav. Who knows Hebrew? What's bar levav?
Bar.
No. Give me a Tehillim.
Bar, no. Bar is
Beis Reish.
The owner of.
So bar means pure. Bar, Beis Reish means pure.
Or from Bahir.
Wild. I know. So I want to know. Bar means pure. Tfuah is called Bar Yosef Atzadik told Paroi. A fifth bar. The word bar is over written over there. It means produce, and the word bar means wild and outside. Lebar milagav, and milagav means gimel vav. That's an Aramaic, but it comes from Hebrew. Is inside, and you're out. Out also means non-domesticated, which also has that wild. So there's something called the shor habar, which is also some sort of creature, and mythically, that is like the whole world. Like you think you're saying you're on a continent. You have these stories in the Gemara about people, they were in the sea and they finally found dry land. And they were about to drown. The ship was going under. And they settled in there. And when they made the barbecue, they realized that they were on the back of a fish. And a fish. And then the same thing with the shor habar, that you thought you're on terra firme. That's what that God. I want to hear someone laugh because there's someone that's looking at us, and whenever a person, I finally, after all these years, I feel safe. They're doing that not from cruelty, from believing in our capacity of growing, and what happens is like the whole thing. You're just think about that. You're not on land. You're on a behemoth. And now the animal decided to itch the back and to walk over there. Whatever you build is nothing, nada. That people are laughing because we're looking at our lives and we're saying, yeah, yeah, I see that. And I hopefully we saw nothing yet because we're still young. The 80-year-old, the 90-year-old, they get it for sure a lot better if they don't lose their mind. Maybe they lose their mind just to check out. It could be. They don't want anyone.
The only way to see it is if you lose your mind.
It could be. I don't know what. Yeah, what's the egg? What's the chicken?
No, the only way to connect to it, I think, because okay. It's so out of...
Now listen to this. This Sharabat and this Leviyasan will be brought together, and it's going to be a show. And they're gonna fight with each other.
The male and the female.
No, the female is the female will be a Sauda. The female is
the Sharabat.
The Sharabat is that we you see we hear stories. It's like Godzilla 2. You know the end already. That's all these movies are taken from this. Some guy was hearing a shear and then he modified it and he ruined it. He should stick, be faithful. That's what the do what the Torah says, because everything has so much meaning. If you change it, you're ruining it. There's Toichen and all of these stories, even by the Goyim, there's a lot of Chachma. No doubt, it wasn't Stam. If they lived for a while, So you have these big monstrosity, these big behemoths that are killing each other.
Wait, who? The Leviathan versus?
It's the Sharabar.
Oh. So where's the Sharabar? So the Leviathan is in the water.
I don't know. What the Sharabar is on land.
A big fish.
Maybe.
It's two entities.
Two entities.
One is taking over the ocean and one is controlling the land.
And both are males.
Well, by the Sharabar, I never read what happened to the male, what happened. I don't know. I know that the fish is salted fish. There's a fish that's salted for 6,000 years. Thank God all of the nutritionists, I just said, they're into salt now. Baruch Hashem. Because my father's generation, you know how many salted? You know how many medical? Now it's going to heal you. Salt. 6,000 years of salt. A shout out to Sabrina that everyone goes to. Salt. Celtic. The Celtic salt. The best salt.
Himalayan.
No, the Himalayan salt is already garnished. They're Celtic. They're going to come with a better salt. You're not feeling good? Salt. You're about to faint? Salt. You're feeling good? Salt. It's like the index.
Take honey.
Mamish. The Russians, it was sugar. Can you imagine? They were dying and then all these stories. They were halashing Pesach, nothing to eat. They survived because of sugar. Today, sugar will kill you. Sugar, somehow. Who knows? Who knows the MS? I don't know what the MS is.
The show will be during Mashiach time, right?
In the future, after the Messianic era.
Oh,
and the Leviathan with the fin, this is very meaningful, will shech the Sharabar. We learn halachas from that. There's a halacha that when it comes to making a meat kosher, not for the temple, kosher for us. You don't need intent to shecht.
You don't
need what? Kavana. Like, for example, if the knife was a kosher knife for shechita, and someone was playing darts, they were playing knives, whatever, and boom, when they threw the knife, the bird came flying, the kosher bird, and boop, and it cut it exactly the way it cut it, it's a kosher shechita. You don't need kavana for the act of shechita to be a halachically valid act. Where do we learn it from? From the future story that we already know. We're talking about the story now as if we watched it already. Because the Leviathan doesn't have kavana. It's a creature. It's not a human being. Its intent is not the intent that God is speaking about in the Torah.
He's fighting it.
Doesn't matter. But it doesn't, it does, it doesn't matter. No, a fight amongst nature, that's not kavana. It's almost instincts. And it's going to shech the Sharabar. And then we're going to say, might as well. We're going to get the female salted, and we're going to take the Sharabar fresh. You buy meat, you want fresh. You don't want to have this old aged. This is also Mishagas aged. You pay a lot of money for the aged meat. When I grow up, if it's aged, it's nishgod. It's terrible. I'm not going
to
eat it. No,
in Brazil, they know what to do.
Aged. Not the aged. I'm sure in the world. Yeah, fresh meat and old salted fish, and that will be the big meal. Together with the Chveis, that it says that when Hashem made the grapes, especially according to one opinion, that the original Eitz Hadas was grapes, was a grape. And some of them were preserved, and in there, there's wine. So you have 6,000-year-old wine, called Yayin HaMishumar. And that will be part of the meal.
Red.
amazing. You know, I like it. This will be a lesiyua. All of these crazy people today, that bread is the worst thing in the world, from going for the best. It doesn't say anything about bread. But it says there'll be a su'uda. A su'uda means, you have to wash. There's going to be a sourdough that was made. Sourdough.
It's going to be less of a famine. The 12 loaves that never got old.
I don't know. It doesn't say that. And we're not allowed to eat it. But we'll have a su'uda. And there's a whole medrash about what's going to happen. We already know the whole thing. Who's going to say Torah? Moshe Rabbeinu is going to say Torah. Aaron HaKohen is going to bench us. Dovra Melech is going to play the fiddle.
Wow. I
want to
go.
We're all going to be there. But we're going to all be there. But this fight is something that Chassidus tries to unpackage. And some of it should remain unpackaged. It's good to live in the beyond me. And some of it is very meaningful. So let me share at least some of what I think I understand correctly. The Sharabar and Leviyasan, they represent either the struggler, which is the land animal. Land represents struggle versus water representing harmony or union, because creatures of the land that were created from the earth, as it says in the Chumash, do not live inside their source. Theoretically, we can go live on the moon. We need oxygen. The only people that live in the land, right? We're not rushing to get there. We don't live in our source. The fish were created from the water. The fish live in the water. Some people, now let's speak about however you want to apply this. So there is our essence, our core. Am I in harmony with it, or am I struggling with it? There is man's pursuit of God. Am I struggling to connect to God? I'm connected, I'm not connected, I feel connected, I don't feel connected. Or is it just a given? I'm living in harmony with God. I'm not even struggling to be connected. There's no struggle at all. And in every human relationship, you have these two parts. And, you know, the emes is in actual life, sometimes like this, sometimes like that, right? Sometimes everything is just flowing. It's harmonious. The goal is not to be connected. Sometimes, no, that's your goal. And there's anguish, and I don't feel connected. Right? Think about your child. I mean, just pick any relationship. So, right? Again, everyone knows their own emes, right? If a child is an infant and everything is normal, even though nothing is normal, but in the theoretical normal world, yeah, then a parent would be, you're connected. You're not struggling to connect to your kid. That's not even the question. Maybe when they get older and they say no and they start acting out, I'm saying infant. Right? The baby begins physically connected to the mother. There's no struggle there. And then part of the relationship is dafke with the struggle. So in the context of God and a person, in the context of Judaism, and this is much bigger than that, but in the context of, if you want to just use, the Shor Habar represents a person who doesn't inherently feel connected to God, which is almost all people prior to the future era, and at least they are aware of something greater than them, all right? We're frum, we have the words, which is good and horrible. There's God, there's Hashem, and I want to be connected to Hashem, but I don't feel connected to Hashem. And when I feel connected, everything is so wonderful. And when I feel disconnected, I feel so down. That's a Shor Habar type of persona. And the Leviyasan, in this context, represents the perfect tzaddik, the perfect tzaddik. There's a tzaddik in the Shor Habar, pure, but it's pure. It's a person that have no self-awareness. No self-aware. There's no me and God. They mamash experience themselves as an extension of God. Like when Moshe Rabbeinu said that if you'll do the mitzvahs, I will give you rain. Who said those words? And you know what? When we heard Moshe Rabbeinu saying, I will give you rain, no one heard Moshe Rabbeinu saying, I, Moshe. You never heard it because he never felt it. Which is quite amazing. The opposite of Pari. No, it's Pari thought he's God. I created, I made. And the biggest tzaddik can be so connected to God that at times the tzaddik will say, I, and the I is God. And it won't bother anyone because you'll feel it, because the tzaddik has no ego. Perfect tzaddik. So when the tzaddik says I, ironically, when you lose your ego, you embody the superego. You embody God. Wow. And the opposite is the big ego, I, to the point where I created, people viewing themselves as God. Which one of these two, from God's perspective, is greater?
The
book. Huh?
The book. And that's the argument for eternity, because both of them are...
So the way Hasidics explains that in the future, when we will become more enlightened, when we're going to look back, many people, all right, will pick one or the other. Like, oh, come on, tzaddik is a person that has no ego. That's the tzaddik. The Shor HaBad is a second-class citizen. Shor HaBad. There's a shechita called Shor HaBad. And
in Chabad
shechita, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't hurt. Yeah, I'm sure there's fish leviathan. There's bands leviathan. Yeah. Or the opposite. Some people will have the right perspective to understand that who's greater? Who is fulfilling the purpose of creation? The Shor HaBad, not the Leviathan. The Leviathan is almost like an angel that were created to help us do what we need to do.
But after Moshiach comes, we won't have this struggle, is that right?
There will be a time in the future, the way this Hasidic discourse explains it. So first of all, them having a struggle means...
That's what makes it balanced. That's what makes it one.
Yeah. But the struggle means, like, which one is greater? Who is gore? When two entities are struggling, like physically, who wins? The stronger one, the greater one. No, there is a legitimate struggle. There should be a struggle in which there should be times, there should be certain places that we are in that, from that perspective, the Leviathan is greater. The tzaddik is greater. The being purely connected to God is greater. Don't we all want to get there? Yeah, we should. If I want to get there, that's greater. Then you have another perspective. No, that's not greater. Why did God create this world for that? God had angels in the heaven. That's not the goal for God. And it's not. God's purpose is for the Shor HaBad to overcome the struggle. It's the way we deal with the struggle. The struggle is just the setting that is needed for us to have our mission. Like, the purpose is not the struggle, but there needs to be a struggle for me to do the right thing. When it's easy to do the right thing, it doesn't have that much meaning, as if when it's hard to do the right thing. So you have that part.
Well, then, isn't it this life? When life means
for sure.
For sure. The concept of what do we need.
Very good, very good, very good, very good, very good. So I want to go back to what this woman just said. I missed your name.
Melissa.
That when it says that in the future, let's go, not only will we witness the struggle, but we will have to, in the future, there has to be a point in the future where the Leviathan will shecht the Shor HaBad. Shechting, just to know, shechting, I know it sounds, shechting means elevating. Shechting means elevating. The Goyim have some understanding how there is this dynamic biodiversity, right? Ecologically, everything is feeding everything else. But the imagination, the image of the current secular world is that it's circular. So everything is feeding off everything else. And with the understanding that you can't just damage one part of creation here, you're going to affect everything else. This concept is true with one big mistake, that in the Torah model, it's not a circle, but it's a straight line going up, that there are many levels, there's a hierarchy, there is a hierarchy, there isn't equality. God being on the top, right, the inanimate, lifeless part of the world being in the bottom, and each part of creation really fulfills its purpose when it becomes the food for one step of life above it. That's always that way. So the inanimate, the water, will give life to the vegetation world, that will give life to the animal world, that will become elevated when they give life to people that are not only physically people, but they're real people, people. Right? If a person lowers themselves down to animals, then they might even instinctively feel, no insulting to vegetarians, that who am I to eat meat? But when a person is connected to God, especially when there's a mitzvah to eat meat, it's not about who am I to eat meat. That's part of my purpose. Part of my purpose is to elevate. That's why in the temple, in the Beis HaMikdash, the bulk of the sacrifices have to be meat. Because that's the ultimate purpose of creation. To take all of these animalistic forces that exist, embodied in my ox or embodied in the air, embodied on my cell phone, and to elevate it, not to ignore it, not to take off my ear, to struggle with it, to elevate it. That's what Shechita represents. So at some point, after a certain amount of struggle, we graduate to a greater struggle, but in the big picture, there will be a point where every creature will become like the Leviathan. So instinctively, when a person says, God, enough with the struggles, they're not wrong. They're not wrong. Because there is, we do believe. In other words, on one hand, that's life. You don't want to struggle, that's death. That's boring. That's part of the truth. There is a part in the truth that there has to be some point where we graduate from the struggle. And even currently, what do we would prefer? Yeah, okay, there'll be a new struggle, but it should be a different type of struggle. Let it be an elevated struggle. Why am I struggling in here? I wish I knew how to go to level 2, to go to level 3. That's what everyone wants. And not to feel. The worst thing is I'm feeling I'm stuck at the same level. That's mamish. That's part of the meaning of golos, which means being trapped. I'm trapped. I can live 70, 80 years. I'm trapped in the same thing. And just like I want to elevate my struggle, ultimately, We're gonna become Leviathan like, which means we're gonna lose. There won't be the struggle.
So I have a question.
Okay.
I'm trying to apply to today's current situation is in Israel. Everything can be applied to different.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of the struggle we had with the Arabs, for ever since we came to the land, 100 years ago, the first Aliyah, you know, all the time fighting. And now, and it seems like we're stuck in it. Doesn't matter what we do, what we give, it's still the same. But now it feels like it's the first time that we rose above.
And, I hope.
And like we say, no more. Now.
I hope. In other words, one thing, just a little comment on your side comment, that in life, sometimes we have to be wise. Not all times. Sometimes, what we view as being compassionate is cruel. In other words, tolerating, tolerance, bechlal, tolerance. And again, everything, we get older, it's not so simple. There's nothing wrong in saying that on a very superficial level, tolerance is a necessity in life. And the non-tolerant people, right, are underdeveloped people. Tolerate. Tolerate yourself, so tolerate someone else. But let me speak about self-tolerance. On the other hand, tolerance, many times, for sure sometimes, is the biggest cop-out. Tolerance is the tool of the Satan to perpetuate, to allow myself to repeat things that I should not do. And even when it's about other people, you can say generally, be strict with you and be tolerant for others. That's a very nice superficial statement, right? When the Friedrich Rebbe was a child, that's what his father told him. Why he asked, why dad, why did God create a human being with two eyes? She told him, because, you know, the right eye represents tolerance, ayin toiva, the left eye represents severity. He says, because the way you look at yourself and the way you look at other people should not be the same. Towards yourself, look at yourself with your left eye, not a bad eye, not ayin ra. Be strict, hold yourself to a higher standard. But don't do that to other people. When I was young, it was taken. This is a good virtue for a seven-year-old, and it is a virtue. So when you heard stories, nice stories, you know, I have so many nice stories about different big rabbinic authorities, that when people ask them a halachic question, of course, everyone is bound by the law, but their approach was to make it easier for the other. Is this good or not good? They found kosher that it's good, but they would never do it. Gemara says these stories. So why don't you say, I want to go beyond the letter of the law, like the virtue that for the other, make it easier. You want to be rigid? Good, knock yourself out. Be rigid with you. But there comes a point where when the people around you are doing things and we don't hold them to a higher standout, it's not because we're tolerant. At some point, it's because we're weak and because we are colluding with something wrong.
And we don't believe in
them. Huh?
And we don't believe in the other person. We're putting them down.
That's another thing. So going over here, look, I really believe that when Mashiach will come, whatever it is that Mashiach will do with our neighbors will be something that we'll look back and we'll say, why didn't we do it? It won't be miracles. It will be a certain attitude in which people around us, it always takes two to tangle. Superficially, don't blame the victim. Don't blame the victim, but I think I'm not speaking about Israel, and I'm not being heartless. I'm saying, for our life, there comes a time where a person has to get up and say, okay, what's my part in it? Because this narrative that I'm the victim, we're the victim, we're the victim. And we wanted to give them a land, and we agreed to the petition, but they didn't, and they started the war, and we're victim and victim and victim. There comes a point in life where you have to stop crying victim, and you have to own the fact that there was something that you're not doing correct. And normally it is tolerating. We tolerate them building up Hamas. That we're tolerating the North now. We're tolerating tunnels. We knew about it. Didn't know it's that bad. Okay, that's every victim says I tolerate it. So this is not a harsh judgment for the past.
The tolerance are going down.
I don't know. We'll find out. It looks like to me. I don't know. It looks like we're tolerating. To me now. Yeah, we should have been finished already. We should have been finished. Not like we got so familiar with it. We become familiar with it that
they could have done much harsher,
much quicker. And we're being criticized anyway, and also many attitudes. The attitude of wanting the approval, needing approval is the biggest satan. Almost all of us. The needing of approval is a killer. For us, how many things do we do in our lives is because we don't have the courage to do.
They're not scared of us, and they used to be with the Oslo Accords. They were very scared of us.
Anyways, with that, it's easy for me to. I just want to apply to me.
Yeah, perfect.
That, you know, when we say that in the future, halachic beshamai. Beshamai was the stricter one. Yeah, because if you want to make it to the future, if you want to have a better life, then you have to have less tolerance. But there's so much wisdom needed. How do you have less tolerance? Go try that. Try it the wrong way, you're going to get a beating you up. Not a bat, kipshutai. I'm talking about, but when people get older, they have to. Life forces a person, or they'll be a perpetual victim. All the older people that will tell you the whole how they're victims, okay, they didn't have someone to help them. And the first step is don't be a victim. Stop being a victim. Stop crying victim. Yeah, you are a victim, but you're not a victim. So figure out where you're not a victim and stop it. And everyone almost has to do it, or they become victims forever. They remain victims forever. So anyways, coming back over here. So first of all, the fact that in the future, at some point, we'll become leviosans. That's very uplifting. The eating of the leviosan, the having the leviosan salted now, to me is very meaningful because there has to be some area in my life that's buried deep under my waters that's already there. It means we already have the levios in this context. We just don't know how to eat it properly. The embracing of the Shor Habor is very meaningful. The acknowledgement of that part of our life. Some people don't tolerate it because they don't believe it's purposeful. The big difference between pain that you tolerate and pain that you don't tolerate, of course we don't want pain. Shkoyach. The big difference is whether you see purpose in it. That's what Viktor Frankl proved as a psychologist, that whoever had purpose survived the Holocaust. Whoever lost their purpose did not survive it. When a woman is giving birth, the only reason, the sages say, that a woman can survive childbirth is because she knows that a baby is coming. There is a purpose. And if, God forbid, a woman loses a child later in pregnancy, if there is pain for the body to expel, it's the worst, because it's pain without purpose. That's another part of life. And the more the purpose, the more power we have to deal with whatever struggle God designated us to deal with. And there's no escape, because God believes in us, so he doesn't have compassion the way we think. God, have rachmanis. That compassion would mean God is looking at us the way you look at a child. And God is looking at us the way you look at an adult. And we're crying, God, I want to be a baby. If we would look at ourselves that way, perhaps we would do it less. We don't see. We don't see what we're doing enough. God wants us to man up, woman up, whatever you want to call it. So we got to do that for us, not for him, for our own well-being. We have to develop. And finally, these are very deep thoughts regarding the Shor Habor. Let me tell you the words. The words are like this, is that when people live in the world of accountability, which is the world of the Shor Habor, because one of the tools we have to deal with struggle, how do people deal with struggle? So remember, when we were young, I grew up in Chabad Hasidic. The classic, you're going to sin, you're going to get punished. If it's presented the wrong way, it's not healthy and not good. But the concept of knowledge of accountability is very important. For me, for you. Again, what happens with tolerance? What's the problem with tolerance? No accountability. I'm almost part of the reason why you're not being trained properly. Right, when kids are out of control, give them sugar, never allow them to do whatever they want, then they get completely out of control. So who's at fault? The parent. What should have the parent done? Accountability, in a good way. A lot more positive than negative. 100%. Accountability is so boundaries. So the Shor Habor, when you have a struggle, you succeed when you figure out how to place proper boundaries for yourself. You have a good standard for yourself. Many people fall because they didn't place boundaries for themselves. They cut themselves too much slack. So there's the world of accountability. In the world of the Leviathan, there is no need for accountability. But it's very appealing. It's very appealing. It's like amazing. Everything is perfect. It's the allure that we have when we look at the grass greener on the other side. What's the allure? We see what appears to us, or what we would like to look, for whatever reason. This is also crazy way of in nature. We have to rectify that. That person has it so easy, or that thing is so pretty, it's so nice. In Miami, the weather is so good. I don't get that over there. Like, wow, like Epis against Miami. I had to come on over here. Like. But there is a world where there is no accountability. There is a world of harmony where everything is perfect. Everything goes. That's amazing, but that's dangerous. Why is that dangerous? Because in that world, evil is tolerated. So I'm giving you guys words. I'm working with this. What the Rebbe is trying to explain in a mimer, that when we say in the future that everyone will be elevated to the level of Leviathan, it doesn't mean that we're going to be so different from the way we are right now. And therefore the question is, if you are in a Leviathan state where there is no boundaries, mamish, and everything is amazing and everything is beautiful, Now, we know that if that would be permitted, there'll be tolerance of bad. So how do we address that? How can you live in the world of Leviathan in the future and not have the problem of some unholy things growing because the environment was too loose, which is the world that we know in right now? It's almost sad, right? All I had the best intentions. I made a party and it was so wonderful and the feeling was so good. And what happened? Because of the wonderfulness, sometimes things go south. See, and we're saying, no, in the future we'll reach it, everything will be gewaldic. But things won't go south. How is that even possible? Listen to these words. Right now, nowadays, the reason why people choose good over bad is because they have to, on some level, understand. There has to be some reason, rhyme and reason. On a very, very deep level, people choose good over bad for no reason at all. Super rational. Words. Haman, he made a lottery. So Hasidus says, why did he make a lottery to kill us? Because he knew that in the world of Mamali, in the world of reason, in the rational world, God will choose us, will protect us. He chose to tap into this beyond Mamali energy, Soivev, everything is equal, everything is the same. That's a lottery. Lottery is not rhyme and reason. On that level, good and bad are equal. He might win. God showed Haman that even on the level of Soivev, not because we are worthy, not because good is better than bad. Even when it's not better than bad, God will choose good and God will reject the bad. And we have this within us. We have within us a capacity somehow that even when we are not held accountable, when there's no downside doing bad, whatever bad is, even on that level, deep, deep, deep down, when that comes out, we will always choose the right thing.
So that's
the future that we're looking forward to.
So that's the level of Leviathan.
And therefore, you can be a Leviathan and remain a Tzaddik. And if we would have access to the Leviathan the whole time right now, you see, that's, everyone is struggling with that. Like, my Judaism is too constrained, or my life is too constrained. First of all, you're not wrong. Something has to be rectified. But the other side of the coin is that when you go into another setting where there is less constraints, right now, in most cases, that person will end up making bad choices. This whole struggle, how do I, you know, it's, am
bad
I...
Bad choices are not necessarily evil. It can be bad choices that are not...
For
right.
Sure, when it was people like us, okay, you're talking real talk, 100%. We're not evil, hopefully, correct. But the concept... In other words, the upside. Why is it? Let's speak about religion.
Okay,
why do you think that in the Haredi,
but it doesn't mean you're wrong.
Some
like, it doesn't
bad
mean
choices.
You it doesn't mean it's bad. That's what I'm trying to say.
Some people make bad choices.
Let's say bad choices. Don't be harsh with the word. If you're gonna picture bad as bad, I'm not talking about that. We don't have to talk about that because eventually it gets there. If you want to word it that way. The challenge we have right now is that we love boundaries. Look at this. We love boundaries. We hate boundaries. Is that a language that you get? You identify with what I'm saying?
No, say it again.
We love boundaries.
Right.
And we hate boundaries.
Right. Okay.
I love boundaries. Why do I love boundaries? Because I know me that if I would not have the boundaries, I'm going to make a mess out of myself. I won't have self-respect if I won't have boundaries.
Okay.
In other words, I hate boundaries because I'm not in the mood. Don't tell me what to do. Shkoyach, I know that. Why do people get upset in the religious world? Don't you know that you got to do that? The listener already knows that. You're not helping the person. Okay, so they get angry. But what they're really getting angry is they're getting angry at themselves for not tolerating boundaries. I don't want to have boundaries. But you know why they're angry? Because they're trapped. Because they themselves know that if I need boundaries. So when people are younger, they think, you know, I'm going to fry out. At least in the world, I don't like these boundaries. Oh, these boundaries are crazy. Black, shachor. I'll have those boundaries. Then when you get older, you realize, you know, it's the same problem. We're trapped. We're trapped. We love boundaries. We hate boundaries. The future, in other words, the idea of what are we looking forward to? There has to be a place. If we would not need boundaries, it's much more beautiful to live in a world where there's no boundaries. Doctors without boundaries. We agree with that. We're not ready for that world right now because we're going to end up making bad choices. The future is somehow going to be, there's going to be some sort of place we're going to get to because of the discipline that we had now. We cannot skip this step. Is that we don't need any boundaries and we will never lower our standards. How does that sound? We will never need any boundaries and we will never lower our standards.
Because we naturally are propelled.
Because we'll be propelled and we'll be propelled on a very deep level. It's going to be a very good. The reason when God chose the Jew over the Goy, God chose Yaakov. So like this, there is looking at Yaakov and Esav's behavior. Yaakov behaved great and Esav was a bad person. He was a murderer. He was bad. So you choose him. When you go to a deeper level, the higher level is that my kids, they're all my kids. They're equally my kids. So they're brothers. How can I reject Esav? He's my son. Problem with that is that that tolerates bad behavior. On the deepest level, even when they're both equal, even when there's nothing that Yaakov has more than Esav, on the deepest level, we believe God chose Yaakov. Not because he's better. And our relationship to the type of life that deep down the neshama wants to live, now we struggle. So we have, the way we do it is that, oh, the standard is in the Torah, in the book. Outside of me, it's over there. I was born a Jew, a teenager. I wish I had that. Okay, and I'm gonna keep the standard. My parents are making me do this. You know, a younger person puts the values outside of them, and they have to be motivated to do it. There has to be a motivation. When we will reach a point where we're gonna realize that the values is in me. And we're going to naturally choose the right thing, almost...
The struggle will go away.
Then the struggle will go away and will never fail.
Is that because in Mashiach, God will be revealed more and we see that there is no...
The way that Rebbe would word it, yes, but the way we would word it is that we can only get there through going through life as we're going through it. And we have to work. We have to work. We cannot go through life asleep. You go through asleep, you wasted years. You go through... You're trying to figure out, it's very simple. Some parts of my life will work, some parts of my life are not working. I don't care what that means. It can mean not working my bank account. It can mean it's not working. I don't feel good. It's something is not working. You have to chop what exactly is not working. When you get to the root, that's your work. Go figure that out. And a lot of the work is this, what I'm saying. I like boundaries, I hate boundaries. If we're speaking about the words of feeling, it felt good. I went on vacation and it felt good. What felt good? You had no boundaries. Could be. Free. I'm talking about normal, not bad. I can wake up whenever I want. I have no responsibilities. I'm not accountable to anything. Hi, it felt great. You know what?
If you've been on vacation the whole time, you were looking forward to the routine and the...
If you're not accountable to anything, you know yourself that it's going to destroy you. So now I need that knowledge. I need that knowledge to make the right choice. That's the world right now. At some point in the future, I won't need that anymore. I won't need the reason. It's why do people embrace their standards? Because it's good for them. Because there's a reason. And the reason is it's good for you. So even though it's not good. The second, but I have to see that. Right? So a person is being motivated. You want to lose weight? Well, you have to eat more disciplined. Well, I don't want to. I want to have the candy bar. You need the motivation. You need to understand, no. There'll be, now I'm not talking about dieting, but I'm talking about what God considers the right way or the wrong way. At some point, because of our work right now, it's going to become so internalized, and so I'll become one with it, that I will make the right choices the whole time. And when I get there, I don't need any boundaries. I don't need any.
You won't see the boundaries.
I won't need them. You're very good. I won't need self-restraint. I will not need self-restraint. It's going to be natural. It's almost like a good habit. What happens when you go to habit? That maybe is the best marshal now. And a good habit, we can all create. Listen, habits we make. I can make a bad habit. And oh my God, it's so hard to get out of it. Many people are lazy out of habit. I'll tell you why. Because kids don't look lazy to me. We had all kids, little kids. They didn't look lazy. When they were 2 years old, they never stopped. So what happened? It's a bad habit. They woke up early. Our kids, they woke up 5 in the morning. Who stopped them? Bad habit. Once it began for a reason. They woke up and they felt rejected, or they woke up and it didn't work for whatever reason. So they began to train themselves bad, and that's all of us. Eating. Some people don't even struggle with eating. I think it's natural for everyone. If they're struggling, it's a bad habit. The stomach, almost everything where we get ourselves in trouble, it's a bad habit. Now, I'm not saying it's easy to get out of it. But what's a good? A good habit means it's just natural. It's just natural. And the more, so there's no less struggle. That's the concept. The concept is to value the struggle, to value the struggle. The Shor Habar might even be bigger than the Leviathan in Chashivut. On the other hand, that in the future, we're heading towards a time we're not going to have a struggle, and therefore I think for me the takeaway was that there's nothing wrong having that desire. For me to know that if I go through life correctly right now, what I'm going towards is towards a life with less struggle. Instead of accepting perpetual tzaddis, that's living without Mashiach. Like we believe in a Mashiach. That's what it would mean. Yeah, I'm not going to deny that right now, many things are not okay with me. But I believe that what? Not Mashiach will come. That Rebbe uprooted that. That I can bring Mashiach. That I can bring Mashiach. And I'm obligated to bring Mashiach. So it gives a lot more purpose. It's not just winning the struggle today, but we're heading in the right direction. Financially in America, we're living in a country, just thought came to me. People live in that with that mindset, and it works for some people that they behave with restraint and they put money away, and then if you don't have matter that steals it, the concept that it's possible, theoretically, to come to a place where this struggle will be lowered. That's a goal that for some people is achievable. I want to just apply the same thing Beruchnius. It must be that there's certain work that now I have to work. But if I make the right choices right now,
right,
make the right investments right now, that there is, that's the Pshat Mashiach, that there'll be a time where at the end the Leviathan is finally going to shecht, it's going to elevate the Shor Habar.
Awesome.
But when we're in the Shor Habar, God, you're giving God nachas. And you're giving God nachas, you'll never give him that much nachas. It's good to value the struggle itself. And it's good to have that futuristic story that the Leviathan will win.
But it's a natural process, though, you know, because let's say you start keeping Shabbos, you know, it's hard in the beginning, and you miss this and you miss that. But after a while, you say, oh,
you know what?
I don't want to not keep Shabbos. This is so much better. And it happens with many things, like if you start eating healthy and you're feeling better, 100%. Then you don't want that stuff.
It's called a good habit. That's exactly what I'm saying. So it becomes easier. So you don't need to have so much self-restraint. It becomes easier.
Natural.
Yeah, we should get there. Amen. We should.